Welcome back to the program. Top of the hour, Rod Brindamore, head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, one of the top teams in the Metropolitan Division. He will be aboard to talk about, amongst other things, players like Seth Jarvis making the team out of camp and some of the new faces, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, how he slots in with Sebastian Aho and new defenseman Ethan Bear, how he fits in with a real good blue line on the Carolina Hurricanes. So Rod Brindamore coming up in second hour, Cassie Campbell-Pascal as well, checks in on the two games tonight, the Vancouver-Edmonton game, the Toronto-Montreal game. Quick note about the Maple Leafs, Sheldon Keefe saying Mitch Marner will be a game-time decision this evening, and also Ilya Mikheyev had surgery on his thumb today. Meanwhile, a couple of other interesting games this evening. Winnipeg Jets facing off against the Anaheim Ducks. NHL debut of former first-round draft pick Cole Perfetti. The Rangers and the Washington Capitals, even though they had that line brawl at MSG towards the end of last season, I don't think anyone thinks for one second that the issue between the Rangers and the Washington Capitals is over. And you saw that with some of the signings and the trades the New York Rangers made in the offseason. This is the first meeting with the newly vamped, the muscled up New York Rangers. This is the first meeting between these two teams since last season's line brawl. See what happens tonight. That game gets underway at 7:30 Eastern. Maple Leafs and Montreal Canadiens at 7 o'clock Eastern. Watch that one on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. Meanwhile, Matt Marchese, something we were hoping to get to on yesterday's program, and we'll sort of carry it over until today. I mean, the conversation with Linda Cohn from ESPN just went too long because, flat out, she was just too good. And I'll be blunt with you, Maddie. I don't know how many people we're going to get on this show that can have a conversation as good as that one was about Ed Jockeman, New York, legendary New York Rangers netminder. So apologies if we blew right past your segment there, Maddie, but you have redemption now.
Yeah, I think I'll be okay with it. Like, I think my ego can handle not getting on the air with you in that last block. I think we'll be okay.
Your ego will be fine on this program. What's the old dojo saying? The protruding nail gets hammered down.
Yes.
Get used to a steady dose of that, Marchese. So one of the things we want to do on a regular basis here is sort of the burning questions of the day. And right off the top, you know, we mentioned some of the things we saw in last night's matchup, and, you know, the day that Nick Suzuki signs his big ticket deal. Max Pacioretty goes off for two goals and one assist. Vegas downs the Seattle Kraken yesterday. Like, that's going to go down as a really bold and potentially great trade. If we all expect Suzuki to end up where he's trending, that's going to look like a great trade for Marc Bergevin. So that's one of the issues. There was a Brian Boyle story coming out of last night as well. The Chandler Stephenson situation with the game-winning goal. Was it a kick? Was it a redirect? Does it even matter? Is what some people say. But what's on your mind these days? What are the burning questions for Matty Marchese?
Well, let's focus on Vegas for a little bit. Firstly, they came out guns a blazing last night, and can we also talk
that game
about
was
how
the game
yeah,
was flat
it was
good.
It was, and can we talk about how the shine is not off of Vegas and the whole, you know, pregame scene and just everything that goes on in that arena, whether it be before the game, during the game, after the game, like that has not worn off at all. It felt like the pageantry might go away. But that intro that they had last night was excellent.
So a couple of things there. Yes, it was. that looked spectacular on the ice last night before the game. The one thing that and Nashville hits the right accent, Montreal hits the right accent, but the two are profoundly different. I find that just as long as you're honest about your market and who you are, you can do great things. And I'm really convinced that that's what makes mascots like Gritty so fantastic, like right out of the gate from the name itself, which I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that name, I think Paul Holmgren came up with that name for the Philadelphia Flyers mascot. That was a hit right from the gate because that's how Flyers fans in some ways see themselves. Now it's a mascot, so there's going to be some self-depreciation attached to it as well. And essentially it's a cartoon, but some of the things that that mascot has done, like it really resonates with that Flyers crowd. And I think that's specific to Philadelphia. Nashville, the way that they handle their game ops and their promotions, whether it's, you know, smashing cars before the game outside the arena, like that fits the vibe, right? All of it. Montreal Canadiens, quite the opposite of everybody. They are steeped in tradition. They are steeped in history. Their ceremonies are first rate. I've always, you know, made the point there's only two places in the world where they do ceremonies properly. One is Buckingham Palace and the other is the Bell Center. Montreal hits the right note because that's who they are and that's who they see themselves as. And to me, that's the success of Vegas. The way that Vegas does game presentation, does game operations, does their pregame, does all of it. Many might look at it and say, man, it's really cheesy, but it's Vegas. Like, you know what to expect when you're going to Vegas. And that, to me, like, all of it is that, you know, that game ops crew just being honest about who they are. And when you can have that kind of, you know, self-awareness about yourself, you can really do great things. And people look at it as legitimate and will have a lot of fun with it. Like, look at the latitude that Vegas has with their game ops. Just because of the whole Vegas motif, the Vegas and the casino motif and the shows motif. Like, they have so much latitude to do really, really cool things. Ditto for Philadelphia. Montreal, again, different note, different accent, but they have the ability to do a lot of things. And a lot of it is, sure, I get it, you know, playoff time and it's ghosts of the forum and all that kind of stuff. But it works. It works. It plays really well. The key to all of it, I believe, is just being honest about who you are.
Yeah, and for the, we keep saying it, for those that haven't been there for a game, it is highly recommended that if you can get there, get there. Because it, I went to go see a Vegas Blues game, like the Leafs weren't even involved, and yeah, it was a blast. And the visiting fans are having a blast.
I gotta go to T-Mobile. I know, I gotta go. It's on my wish list. I know, I'm so married to studio work that it's tough to get out and get to different markets. I'm dying to go see a game, I'm dying to go see a game in Vegas. I'm dying to go see a game in Seattle as well.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, speaking of Vegas, let's talk about some over-unders for the season, and specifically for players. So the big one has been Connor McDavid, 128.5 points, over or under. Like, that's an insane number, Jeff. Like, that's next level.
The thing is, though, he's an insane player.
Yes.
And I know the points last year were, it's like, remember when he hit, like when he hit 100, we all sort of shook our heads and said, on the one hand, yeah, we're surprised. But on the other hand, like, how surprised can we be? Yeah. I look at Connor McDavid this year. I'll take the over on that, by the way, because, you know, he's going to play, like, we know the Calgary games. Listen, Calgary's going to try to drag you into a 2-1, 3-2 game. You know, the Battle of Alberta is going to be a complete contrast in styles, where Edmonton's going to want to be flying high and Calgary's going to want to, you know, stick the blade of their stick into your hips and drag you down in the neutral zone. Like, it's going to be a Calgary, to put it this way, Edmonton wants to play an up-tempo, exciting game. I think Calgary wants to play an ugly game, ugly up the hockey. Doesn't matter how we get there as long as we get the 2 points. Edmonton's going to be able to beat up on Anaheim, though. Jury is still out on what we're going to get with the Los Angeles Kings. I think the San Jose Sharks are going to be a team that has a challenge defending. And is their goaltending any better? And if so, how much? I think Edmonton's got a good shot at lighting them up. Seattle's going to be able to defend, and they got a decent goaltender. The Vancouver games, you know, we'll see installment number one. And I think the Vegas games are going to be, have the ability to be high scoring as well. I think they're in a division where they're going to be able to beat up teams, run up the score, and at least early, because of the emphasis on cross checks, there'll probably be more power plays. And let's remember one thing. This is why early in the season, you always bet the over on games. Goal scoring is always up in the first month. Goal scoring is always up because, you know, teams don't have their systems in place and the guys are just fresh off training camp and, you know, not everything has clicked together. And, like, by the time, you know, mid-November rolls around, there aren't many huge mistakes in a game that lead to scoring chances. Like, it's tough to score in the NHL, man. It's a really hard league. But the first month, until everyone gets settled in and there's a bunch of new faces and new systems you get used to and all that, the goal scoring is always up. So couple that with the increased power play the teams will get because of further enforcement of cross-checking penalties. I think this is a recipe for Connor McDavid not to hit 128, but maybe, dare I say, as high as like 135.
Well, his pace last year in what would, if it was an 82 game season, was 153 points, I believe it was.
Yeah.
So yeah, and you know what?
I think on our Sportsnet.ca predictions, I think I had Art Ross Trophy winner getting 130 points.
Yeah,
but I could see 135 for McDavid.
Yeah. Okay. So the other thing is, quickly before we get to a couple of other ones, how much does the travel play into this? Because there was travel last year, but they're in a city for 3-4 days. You know, like, and they're playing the same teams over and over again. Does that change, you know, the mentality on him hitting that over at all for you?
I don't know. Like, the thing about Connor McDavid is too, like, Connor McDavid's not an old hockey player. He's 24 years old. So I always say, like, yeah, travel sucks and the guys hate it and all that, but he's still young. He's 24 years old. I don't know. To me, he's right in the sweet spot of the bat. He's very much in his prime. I don't know the travel affects him that much. And it's not like they're like who has the worst travel in the NHL? Dallas. Dallas, yes, has bad travel. So if I'm like, you know, Roope Hintz, or if I'm Tyler Seguin, or, you know, anybody else, Jason Robertson, like, yeah, travel is a factor. You know what? Actually, you know where travel is a factor more than anything else? And Dallas were the first one to realize this, and they were one of the first to go to a strong platoon. Goaltenders. Goaltenders, yeah, man. Like, if you're the Dallas Stars, they were the first ones. Now everybody has it. Try to do the platoon system and split the games. But Dallas were the first ones to really recognize it. And they said, look, this is out of necessity. You know, we got to have two goaltenders because our travel is a killer and it's hard on goalies, more so than forwards.
All right, let's roll through these because we only got a couple minutes left. Okay. Nathan MacKinnon, 90.5 points. That feels like an over.
Feels like an over to me. Yeah, I'm going to go over on that one. I think McKinnon's going to have a monster, like, you know, Nathan McKinnon's going to have another season where he's in the conversation for the Hart Trophy. You know the thing I love about Nathan MacKinnon? Talk to him at the Players Tour in Chicago, Elliot and I, for the podcast. He's convinced he's done nothing. Like, he talks about all these other guys. But his point is, like, look, like, what have I won? Like, sure, you know, his Halifax Mooseheads won the Memorial Cup in Saskatoon. But he's like, you know, what have I won here? What have I won in the NHL? What have I done? Like, he just refuses to put himself in the class of the Sidney Crosbys because in his mind, he's won nothing and done nothing. He's still a driven guy. 90 points plus? Yeah, I'll take the over.
Yeah. Okay, some sportsbook had Taylor Hall over under 13.5 goals. That feels like
over
free
all
money
day
to me.
Over,
yeah,
all
that
day
feels like free money.
Like, I know that he's not going to be playing with David Krejci. Like, I know it's going to be a steady dose of Charlie Coyle as his center, but I'll take the over on Taylor Hall, 100%. And, you know, by the way, just as an aside about Taylor Hall, I've always felt the NHL has missed the boat on marketing Taylor Hall. I think he's got, like, one of the best personalities and one of the best deadpans, and he's a funny guy, and he's good-looking and all of it. I've always felt that one of the guys that the NHL has missed out on marketing was Taylor Hall. Speaking of marketing, how good is that Mass Mutual commercial with Ovechkin and Backstrom?
Yep.
Like, old school 70s hockey fans will remember, and I tweeted it out yesterday, the old Swanson dinner ads with Lanny McDonald and Brian Glennie, and those were great for the day, but the new version of the McDonald-Glennie commercials, and they did a bunch. You've got to see Ovechkin and Backstrom. It's flat out hilarious. We step away here on the Merrick Show. We come back with Rod Brind'Amour, the head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, Cassie Campbell-Pascal at the bottom of the hour. Keep it here. Back to the program, Jeff Merrick Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Glad you're aboard today. Bottom of the hour, Cassie Campbell-Pascal checks in from the NHL on Sportsnet. two big games tonight on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. Toronto Maple Leafs facing off against the Montreal Canadiens later. It's the Edmonton Oilers taking on the Vancouver Canucks. The Carolina Hurricanes, their first game Thursday against the New York Islanders. Their head coach, Rod Brind'Amour, joining me here on the Jeff Merrick Show. Rod, first of all, thanks so much for doing this. How are you today?
Good, no problem. Glad to do it.
One thing, you know, I'm always curious about players making that transition from junior hockey right to the NHL and young kids in the lineup. And it's not as if, you know, you're a team at the bottom of your division. Like, the Carolina Hurricanes are one of the top teams in the NHL. Share with us how Seth Jarvis was able to make this squad out of camp. Like, I don't know if he stays. I don't know what the plan is, but right now he's on the team. How did he do it?
He made it because he deserved to, number one, on his play for the last couple of weeks, and he's fit in. So, you know, whether he stays, that's another question. I think he was one of the better guys. So, you know, obviously you're right. He's just a kid and coming out of junior hockey. He's not 100% ready yet, I don't think, but he certainly deserved to be here and, you know, be a part of this right now. And, you know, we're honestly, it's a day by day situation with him. And, you know, but like I said, he deserved to be here by the way he played preseason.
You know, what do you think the biggest jump for him is going to be? Like, I understand, like, I'm talking to someone who never played a day in the American Hockey League. Like, you went from Michigan State to the St. Louis Blues and right into the career. But, like, what's the biggest thing that a young player like Seth Jarvis is going to have to get himself used to as he jumps into a new NHL?
Well, it's the playing away from the puck. It's 100% what it is. All the young junior kids that we see come in, you know, they're so talented, but it's their awareness away from the puck. And I think it's mostly because where they play or have played, they have it all the time. And, you know, it's so different at the NHL level. And at the NHL level, you mess up a coverage, it's in your back of your net, right? Like, mm-hmm. So it's just that awareness and that learning curve is where I see there's, you know, the junior kids especially, because they're just so young. They haven't had these, you know, the reps at this level. But they like, he picks it up quick. And so the talent stuff, the I always say the stuff you can't teach is what, you know, he has, and it's what Svesh had. It's, you know, that's the special stuff that these guys have and makes him an NHL player. But what really mm-hmm. makes him stick is being able to play away from the puck and just learning the game at this level.
And is that only something you can learn with close contact with your coach and playing experience? I mean, these guys all come in, as you well know, they all have their own skating coach. They all have shooting coach, you know, nutrition coach, like all of it, but it's all sort of like all their skills training is generally all geared around offense as opposed to defensive game situations. Like, what do you do when someone comes in just loaded with offensive skill and you have to say, you know, in the NHL, it's a two-way street?
Well, that's what you're teaching them. And like I said, I think it just at this level, because teams are so detailed in what you're playing, you just can't miss up a coverage. Like, it happens all the time. That's why there's chances and goals. But, you know, if you're out there and you don't really have that awareness, you're double on that, and then you're not going to be successful. So it's really just the learning curve for these young guys. And then there's a pace issue, too. You know, getting used to this pace, but because they are, like I said, these special players, we're only talking a handful every year.
Yeah.
It's, you know, they've already got it. And I think, I don't think, you know, Seth was something that we thought would be this good right away. Like, I didn't anticipate it, but that's why he's still here. Cause we're still unsure if, you know, where, I guess how good he is. Right. Like, that's really the question. It's why he's around. Like I say, he showed it in training camp. And, you know, we're still, I guess, still trying to figure it out.
Jesperi Kotkaniemi. This was quite a saga, an entertaining one in the offseason. As someone obviously following on the outside, it was amusing at times. Very serious, both for the Carolina Hurricanes, even though social media had a great time with it. Very serious for Carolina, very serious for Montreal as well. Playing Jesperi Kotkaniemi on the wing, You know, I've always maintained that, you know, you look at the history of the NHL, Rod, as you well know, and there is a rich history of young centers that spend time on the wing before making the transition to that center position, just because it is loaded with responsibility. What do you need to see out of Jesperi Kotkaniemi, you know, this season, any subsequent seasons, should he sign an extension, as we all believe that he will? Like, what do you need to see from him as a coach?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're dealing with a young player as well. I mean, you got to remember that he is still a young player. You know, he's been in the league for a long time, or a few years. What I need to see, I want to see that a talent that he has mature and kind of be able to, I think, prosper at this level, right? Like, really cash in on this. Like, you can see he knows where the puck needs to go. He's got a great shot, you know. He's got all the tools. Now we got to put it together, and you know, that's like, obviously that's why we went and got him. We all think he has that ability, and now it's up to us to bring it out of him, and that'll be what I'm hoping to see, you know, obviously throughout the year.
You know, this is a team with Rod Brindamore, head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes. This is a team that's loaded with young talent. Mentioned Jesperi Kotkaniemi. Sebastian Aho is another one that everybody knows by now. Martin Natchez on the horizon. He's going to, you know, join a list of, you know, good young forwards with the Carolina Hurricanes. I wonder about Andrei Svechnikov. And one thing that I worry, but not worry, one thing that I wonder about him is, I'm always curious, young players and their first season with their real first big ticket contract. And listen, he earned it. He got it. Big ticket from the Carolina Hurricanes. Is that something, Rod, that you would even discuss with Svechnikov? Because we've seen before, you know, players just distracted with, okay, I'm getting compensated this amount now. This is where my performance has to be. And that adds a whole other layer of anxiety on the player. Is that even something you talk to Svechnikov about?
You know, it's a good question. I thought about it briefly, but once you get to know the person, I think it's really almost a case by case basis. You know, he's a real responsible kid. I mean, I know you've heard him probably talk, and yep. I don't worry about him. Like, what you're saying, is this going to change him? You know, is this going to, you know, be a distraction or whatever? And once you get to know him, that's not going to be the case. So it's, I'm not too worried about it. If anything, you know, last year might have been a distraction because he knew he was playing for something other than, you know, he knew he had to cash in, if you know what I mean. He had to have a big year. And I think, if anything, that might have been more of a distraction. Whereas now, I think he's just all about, you know, that's not an issue anymore, obviously. You just go play. And I think it'll free him up a little bit more, actually.
You know, in the 2017 draft, I think you guys really got a gift in Martin Natchez. I was one of those people that were shocked he didn't go higher, but good on you guys. He didn't get past Carolina. What's the expectation for Martin Natchez this season?
Yeah, I agree 100% with you. Like, I remember that draft very well, and that was, we were, you know, extremely lucky to get him. So where do we, you know, expect? I think he's going to keep getting better. We love him. He's a game breaker type ability. And I think what we're hoping to see this year out of him is just more consistent play. Like, I don't need him to try to be a game breaker every shift. And he wants to be, like, he's always trying to do that. It's just some shifts, it's not there. And, you know, just having that, it's okay that, you know, live to fight another day mentality on your shift, you know, that kind of thing, a little more consistency. You know, we ask that from everybody, you know, because like you said, he does have that raw talent that you just can't teach that stuff.
Ethan Bear is another player you're getting your first season with. And listen, I was a big Warren Fogle guy, really liked the player. I've watched him, you know, going back to his time at, you know, St. Andrews here in Ontario. But listen, Ethan Bear to me is a real special player. I think that the sky's the limit for Bear. Tell us what the coach thinks of this, of his new right shot 24-year-old defenseman.
Yeah, there's a, you know, it's obviously a new player for us. And getting to know him over this last few weeks, you know, has been good. Like, he's gotten better and better. And I agree with you. I think, you know, there's a lot to like here. So I guess my initial take on him is, you know, we're really excited about the player. And now, you know, we've got to give him a little time here. But I think, there's a lot of potential here to be something special. So, yes, we did have to give up a good player. We love Fogues. I agree with you. He's a great player, and I think he's going to get better too. But, you know, that's one of those trades that probably will be good for both teams.
You know, change is a reality for every team in the offseason, obviously. And there's a couple of, as we just mentioned, a couple of them. Ethan Bear comes in. Jesperi Kotkaniemi comes in as well. There are always sort of players on the fringes that make their way in, make their way out. What's the key to blending new players in with a roster when you're at the at the upper end? This isn't like a bottom feeding team that's just adding pieces every year to try to climb the ladder. I mean, you guys are really good. Like, you guys are a really good squad. What's the key to bringing in either, you know, other, you know, players that, like, look at Ethan Bear, like, he's going to play Jacob Slavin. You look at, you know, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, he's playing with Sebastian Aho. What's the key to breaking in new players at the highest level with the Carolina Hurricanes?
Well, it's really trying to create that comfort for all the players, I think. And that comes from the group. It's you know, the coaches can do so much, but it's really, you know, how the group, you know, brings those guys in and then makes them feel comfortable. And, you know, I think we have a pretty special group that way with the leadership we have, and, you know, just making any new guy feel welcome. And I think that's a big key to it, you know, being comfortable in your surroundings and being able to be who you are. So that's a big part of it. That actually helps, I think, your point of who they're playing with. That makes it a little easier too. If you come to a spot and, you know, we have some good players to play with, I think that always, I think, makes it a little easier for anybody to make an adjustment.
How much of your training camp, how much of your practices have revolved around reminding players of the new enforcement on cross-checking? And what do you expect it to look like? Are we going to see a spike in penalties early?
I don't know. I hope not. But they just generally every year, regardless if it's a new rule or whatever, there's always seems to be way more penalties. I think they always kind of do it that way. So I don't know what to expect. I think the cross-checking rule, I think it's great that they, you know, I don't know if they, how do you want to view it? I think they just starting to call a rule that's been in there forever, just was never called. So now I think it's an easy one for the players to adapt to. You know, there'll be just like any new rule that kind of gets in. There's always that, oh man, that's not a penalty, it's a push or whatever. Like, there'll be that. Yeah. You know, just because the game's so fast, and that's a whole nother issue. But I think it's good, right? It's a cross check. We're doing away with these ones that are just so unnecessary that cause injuries. Like, why wouldn't we, you know, be happy about it? So we'll see how it goes. But I think NHL's doing a good job on this.
You know, I was saying this to had Rick Tockett on with me last week, and I was we were talking about this issue, and I said, you know, who are some of the players, Rick, that you thought of when, you know, the word came down from the NHL that they're going to enforce cross-checking a lot more? Like, I thought of players like Tim Kerr and Dino Cicerelli and Holmstrom and Craig Simpson, guys that, man, they must get out of bed every morning, even still now, and, you know, they're reminded of how defensemen would abuse them in front of the net. Who are, from your playing days, who are some of the guys that you think about when you think, wow, you know what? I wish there was a more, you know, more enforcement on cross-checking back when I played. Who are some of the guys you think of? Maybe yourself. Maybe yourself.
Well, no, I wasn't a big cross-checker, but I do remember, you know, but it was part of the game. Like, you knew when you went to the front end, especially you're playing, we had some good battles in the days with the Devils. Yep. You know, okay, I'm going to take one here from Scott Stevens. You know you are, right, kids? So that's okay. I got to get there. Like, that was just part of the game. You know, Ken Danico, they had those big guys. They would give it to you, you know, but you knew that's part of it. So, and you didn't think anything, like, it was bad. I go there, that's what I'm expecting. So now I just think it's the game's changed for the better, we know. So those guys had some tough teams, tough defense. Any big defenseman back in the day, that was, if you didn't do that, you weren't going to play and clear the front of the net, right? How do you do it? Well, you're free to give a guy how many whacks you can, not in the head, but anywhere else was probably pretty good. We know better now. So I think it's, you know, like I said, I think it took a while, but they're calling the rule probably the way it should have been called.
Hatcher, Pronger, I mean, there were some big guys back there, Ron.
Exactly.
when you played. Hey, listen, we'll end on this one. This is a really competitive division. I don't need to tell you that. The Metropolitan, I even think that Columbus isn't going to be as easy an out as a lot of people think. The Metropolitan Division is real tough. There's some really good teams, you know, a lot of people are sort of saying this is going to be a battle between yourselves and the Islanders for that top spot, but go right through, like, the Rangers are an improved team. The Devils are an improved team. The Flyers are an improved team. Pittsburgh, what they just did, you know, last night against Tampa, Washington, is still the Capitals. Like, this is a tough division. Like, when you look at it, what goes through your mind when you say to yourself, maybe there's not going to be any easy nights here in this division, no nights off for the Hurricanes?
No, there hasn't been, though, since I've been around that I can remember, and certainly in these last few years coaching, there's never been an easy night. So it's just business as usual. You know, last year we had different divisions where we had Tampa and Florida and Dallas. Like, it's whatever, right? Like, every night is a huge challenge. And I think the good news about hopefully getting 82 games in is the best teams rise to the top end when it's all said and done. And that's one of the teams we want to be. So it's going to be a rat race and be a tough every night.
It will be. Listen, we wish you and the Carolina Hurricanes all the best this season. Tough division, certainly, and you're one of the elite teams in the NHL. You've been fun to watch for a long time, and we hope that continues. Thanks so much for doing this. Best of luck as you play your first game against the Islanders on Thursday. Thanks for this, Rod.
Okay, you got it. Thank you.
There we go. Rod Brind'Amour, he's the head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes. They'll open up their season tomorrow against the New York Islanders. Carolina, one of the favorites to win the Metropolitan Division this season. But again, man, that division, I always wonder about a couple of teams, and I keep coming back to Washington too in the Metropolitan. Just wonder about, okay, there wasn't much that they did in the off season by the way, tonight, Alexander Ovechkin, game time decision, those are his own words, and he said put that on the Twitter. You always wonder about aging curves with teams. You wonder about aging curves with the Capitals. You wonder about aging curves with the Pittsburgh Penguins as well. And then you look at teams that are on the rise, the Devils and the New York Rangers. Do they have enough yet? You look at it on paper and you say they're close, but they're not quite there. But sometimes teams pop a year early, 2 years early. Who knows? As we bring in our producer, Matty Marchese, when you look at Carolina in the context of the Metropolitan, where do you see them fitting in?
Well, they've got to be at or near the top for me, Jeff. I think they're the best team in the division. And part of the reason why I think that is Rod Brind'Amour. Rod Brind'Amour has done such a great job with that team. And, you know, when I saw the Kotkaniemi offer sheet, and then eventually, you know, he signs it and ends up in Carolina, the first thing that came to my head was he's going to be great in Carolina, because it seems like anything that Rod Brind'Amour touches turns to gold. Like, he's been that kind of a coach. And then you look at just the talent on that team, Jeff, and let's not underestimate how good that blue line is as well. Like, Jacob Slavin, you talk about him a lot as one of the more underappreciated defensemen in the NHL. Brett Pesce's another guy, same type of deal. Like, nobody talks about him, but he's still pretty good. There's a lot of firepower up front, and be curious to see what Kotkaniemi is. But you look at Natchez, Aho, Sveshnikov, Teravainen, Niederreiter. Like, you could go down the list. It's a pretty good group, Jeff.
Yeah, left side looks good. Kotkaniemi, Sveshnikov, and Nino Niederreiter. Down the middle, Sebastian Aho, Vincent Trocheck. And we didn't even talk about Jordan Staal. Like, whoever is a sort of fringe candidate for the Selkie. It looks good. Like, again, like, I don't know what more we can say about the Carolina Hurricanes. I don't know what more I can say about Jacob Slavin. I think everyone pretty much knows by now that when it comes to defensive defensemen, and listen, Jacob Slavin is never going to win the Norris because he doesn't put up the points. But if there was a trophy for a defensive defenseman, regardless of the offense, and I know you can make the argument that the best way to play defense is to never have to defend, and you're keeping the puck in the other team's zone, and usually a red light goes off. Like, I understand that argument. I get it. But as far as making the puck goes in, puck goes out argument, and that's what you want from a defenseman, Jacob Slavin's top dog. Like, if we introduced another Norris trophy, and I don't know, call it the Rod Lang way. I'm trying to think of, like, defensive defensemen that have you know, that have achieved greatness. And it's very rare, by the way, that defensive defensemen go into the Hockey Hall of Fame, which is why I was happy to see Kevin Lowe go in. I think you put Jacob Slavin in that conversation as a perennial favorite to win that. That's actually a good question. If you look at, the quality of player that has gone into the Hockey Hall of Fame, and we'll park goalies because they're their own conversation, but just defensemen and forwards, at least there are more defense-first forwards that go into the Hockey Hall of Fame, right? Your Bob Gainey styles, your Bob Gainey types. That may not have the offensive numbers, but their defensive contributions are significant and they go in. That doesn't really happen with defensemen at all. You know, Leo Boivin. Oh boy, that's a dated reference. Rod Langway. And just mentioned a player like Kevin Lowe. See, the one guy that I always, let me know what you think about this one, Maddie. I don't know if this is like too hot take Wednesday for you, but the one guy that if I had a vote or if I was on the committee that I would try to make a case for the Hockey Hall of Fame is Adam Foote. Now, not many people try to make the case for Adam Foote. Like every year that rolls around, we get a lot of cases. Like every now and then, even, I mean, Stewie would always talk about Pat Verbeek. And you look at the numbers, you can make the strong case for Pat Verbeek. Old school people will make, and again, it's a goalie, though, make a case for like a Lauren Chabot. But there's every year we tend to have the same conversation about who the league has overlooked, right? Steve Larmer is another obvious one. I would make the case for Adam Foote just because the one area that I think has been horribly misrepresented or not misrepresented, neglected in the Hockey Hall of Fame is a defensive defenseman. And in his era, when Adam Foote and the Colorado Avalanche were winning Stanley Cups, was there a better defensive defenseman, like strictly defense, than Adam Foote? They were better all-around defensemen, certainly. Like, that was the era of great defensemen, Scott Niedermeyer, Chris Pronger, two that jumped to mind right away. Oh, yeah, that guy number five on Detroit, he was pretty good, too. But you could, I'm convinced you could make a strong case for Adam Foote as far as for being sure. A defensive defenseman going into the Hockey Hall of Fame.
For sure you can. Whenever I hear defensive defenseman, the name that always comes up to me, just because my dad used to talk about him all the time, because my dad claims that this man was the first player to ever go down and block a shot and used to do it with his face, was Bill Gadsby. He talked about him like at length. Like he said, I'm telling you, I never saw anybody go down and block a shot until I saw Bill Gadsby do it with his face. So that always comes to mind. It is true. And, you know, it's just because offense is what sells, right, Jeff? Like that's been the case in any sport, really. Like, you know, in baseball, we don't talk about these great seventh inning relievers, you know, because we talk about the closers.
But we talk about great infielders that make great plays, and we talk about right fielders with big arms and center fielders with amazing range. So we do. I mean, to me, baseball is a freak sport because you can make the argument and. I've heard a lot of players say this. It's more fun to play defense than offense.
Playing defense in baseball is too much work for me.
It's fun. But anyway, I've always found it, you know, in a lot of ways, I'll talk out of the other side of my mouth on this one. I've always found it bizarre that there's a trophy and a celebration of the player that stifles excitement, that stifles offense. dude, there's a trophy for that.
Yeah,
like that's like when you think about like the conservative nature of hockey, there's a trophy for players that kill excitement and snuff out the great players. I mean, essentially,
but there's a skill to that, though, right?
They created the trophy for Bob Gainey. Like, listen, Gainey's so good. What can we give him? It was essentially the conversation. Let's make a trophy for him.
It's true.
Anyway,
okay, so I would
put Slavin in that conversation, but go ahead.
Okay, I've got a Hall of Fame question for you since we kind of went on this topic about not appreciating defensive forward. Okay, 1,484 games, 452 goals, 732 assists for a grand total of 1,184 points, two Selke trophies. Is that good enough for you? I'm not giving you the name because I'll tell you who you if you do choose them. 452 goals, two Selkies.
Yeah, the Barry, and you're talking about Rod Brind'Amour, right?
Ah, shoot.
Yeah. No, but that. But listen, the barrier to entry offensively traditionally was 500.
Yep.
Goals. I would make the argument now that the get in point is 400.
Probably now, yeah.
Does that sound right?
I think so. You know what? I think it's becoming. I think it's more of a points per game type deal that we're getting into right now. Like if you played 1,000 games and you averaged a point per game, you should probably get into the Hall of Fame. Like that's just kind of the barrier that I've gone by. But we're talking about Rod Brind'Amour, who was a great defensive forward as well, and still put up those kind of numbers.
Yeah. See. This is for a taller forehead than me and a bigger brain than me. Given how I've always been curious about this, Maddie. I'm glad you brought this up. Given the new lenses that we look at hockey through, and given the new information that we can glean from hockey games by way of advanced statistics, analytics, I really wonder, because hockey's always in a constant state, all sports is, looking forward and looking backwards to recontextualize what we've just seen. I wonder how many players whose greatness we just flat out missed, because at the time, we didn't have any tools to measure that player's efficiency accurately.
Yeah. It's a good
point.
Like
if we had all the stats and all the, you know, the analytical equations, then as we do now, who else would we value? Like, who have we missed out on? And I don't know the answer to that. Like, there may be a few really obvious, and there are, I'm sure, some people in the analytics community that will tweet at me, DM. DMs are open, man. Hit me up if there's some names that come to mind right away that we've just flat out missed on because we couldn't measure it properly. We couldn't measure the effect that they had on the game. I mean, so much of it was just, this is what I see. Do you agree with me?
Yeah. Like,
that's how this game has historically always been measured, and counting stats. Did he score a goal? Did he get an assist?
Doesn't it feel like Pavel Datsyuk is going to be that guy? He was great offensively, but I'm just trying to look up his points per game over the course of his career, because that's what people will look at as the basis for the Hall of Fame argument. But Pavel Datsyuk, you know, we appreciate him now, but was not, you know, his defensive game and his ability to, you know, take pucks off of opposing players and everything. Like he was mm-hmm. absolutely incredible at that. And yeah. When we look at the numbers over the course of his career, he's under a point a game, 918 in 953 games. But there were years where he was incredible offensively and very good defensively. Three-time Selke winner.
Yeah, and listen, that was and that was always a controversy too, eh? Can you give a Selke trophy to someone that never killed penalties? It was always said about the Detroit Red Wings that under Mike Babcock, with like that era of Red Wing, the saying went, when your best offensive players are also your best defensive players, it's impossible to lose a line matchup. And when Zetterberg was on the ice, Datsyuk was on the ice, like, did Mike Babcock lose line matchups? No, never. Never, just because of, like, I loved those two. I think we're all on the same page, though, especially Zetterberg. I know Datsyuk was spectacular and looked great and was slick and great moves, and he couldn't lift up his stick. He was, like, sneaky strong, all of it. But, man, game in, game out, God, I loved Zetterberg. I wish Henrik Zetterberg was still in the NHL. Like, I just wish the health was still there and he could still play in the NHL. Like, that's one of those guys that I never wanted to see retire. Just loved Zetterberg. One of my favorite players ever, Maddie.
Yep, for sure.
Let's hit a break. Cassie Campbell-Pascal is on the other side. The games on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey tonight are as follows. The Maple Leafs face off against the Montreal Canadiens, and the Vancouver Canucks take on the Edmonton Oilers. Both these two games, and if we have time, get into the Calgary Flames and the Canadian national team and the PWHPA, who have a big weekend coming up with their all-star team facing off against the U.S. national team. It's a lot of stuff to get into with Cassie, so I better shut up. Get to the spots, and we'll come back with Cassie. Keep it here. Jeff Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to the program, Jeff Merrick Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Just heard from Rod Brindamore, Carolina Hurricanes head coach. They'll face off against the New York Islanders as their season opens up tomorrow. Meanwhile, tonight, Wednesday night hockey opens up. The Toronto Maple Leafs hosting the Montreal Canadiens. Nightcap game, Edmonton Oilers hosting the Vancouver Canucks. Cassie Campbell-Pascal will be part of the festivities, kicking off the schedule this evening. She joins us from the NHL on Sportsnet. Cassie, how are you today?
I'm good, Jeffrey. How are you?
I'm doing very well. A quick little note to pass along to our listeners here. Gerard Gallant mentioning that everybody is healthy, so that means that Ryan Reeves and also Jared Tenorti will be in the lineup tonight for the Rangers as they face off against the Washington Capitals. But we expect a very calm evening in Washington tonight, don't we? Don't we, Cassie?
Is Wilson in the lineup? Is Wilson in the
lineup?
Oh,
he'll be in the lineup. The only question is does I was talking to this with Elliot off the top. You know, does Peter Laviolette, you know, put the brakes on that? Just say, listen, Tom, we don't want you to do this. And if that'll have any effect whatsoever. But that's one of the sidebar issues to that New York Washington game. You know, it's very rare, Cassie, that we get a sort of, you know, a little bit of old school back in the NHL. But for that game, it feels like there's going to be a little bit of old school in that game.
You just kind of get that feeling. And, you know, even with the coaches, too. You know, you talk about Peter Laviolette. Like, I don't know. I think both those guys would kind of welcome that and, you know, welcome that rivalry right off the get-go. And, I want people to watch our show, but if you have that on your iPad on the side, you know, I think that's okay. Like, I'd be okay with that, right? So I'm pretty sure we'll have it on in studio on a side TV for sure.
I was saying to Elliot, I think Ryan Reeves may end up handing you guys an intermission all together tonight. So let's talk about the Maple Leafs and their game against Montreal, the Vancouver game against the Edmonton Oilers as well. And we'll start with the late game first. There's pressure on every Canadian market. There's pressure on every single Canadian team, no matter whether you're a bottom feeder or you're a Stanley Cup candidate. When you look at these two teams right now, Edmonton and Vancouver, based on expectations, do you have a sense of where the pressure is greater, or do you look at all Canadian teams and say, hey, Merrick, it's Canada. There's pressure on everybody in this country.
Yeah, I think the latter, but if you're talking about those two teams specifically, I think it's the Oilers. You know, I just feel the way they went out last year, you know, four straight to Winnipeg, you know, the talent they've got, obviously, in McDavid and Draisaitl. You know, I think there's an expectation that the time is now for them to win, you know, be on top of that division, get into the playoffs and definitely, you know, win a Stanley Cup. And, you know, in every organization right now, they're looking at their team and they're thinking, okay, great. We're going to win a Stanley Cup. Like, that's the expectations from within, from every organization. But you do get the sense that, you know, just through Connor McDavid's words over the summer and, you know, him committing more to a defensive side of his game and understanding that that's a big part of winning a championship. You just kind of get the feeling around there that they need to be better and they need to definitely get out of that first round.
You know, these two teams, Vancouver and Edmonton, both made some offseason changes. You know, Edmonton, you know, let go of Ethan Bear. Warren Fogle comes in. The Duncan Keith, Cody Ceci pair come in the offseason as well. Like, I look at Edmonton and I say they're a deeper forward group. I still have a lot of suspicions about the blue line. I'm not necessarily, although Mike Smith was excellent at times last season, I still have question marks about the netminding. For Vancouver, Cassie, agree or disagree, I say, you know, Travis Green has three lines that can score, but there's a big roll of the dice in Oliver Ekman-Larsson. And if he can regain the form from a couple of seasons ago, then that's fantastic. If not, this contract could be an albatross around this organization's neck for a long time. I do like Thatcher Demko. I want to throw that in there as well. How do you see the Vancouver Canucks right now?
Well, I think, again, I kind of look at Calgary's back end sort of similar to what Vancouver has. Is it could be really, really good, but you have a lot of guys that still have something to prove back there, right? So you're not sure what you're going to get. And, you know, for me, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, I think he's going to be better than he was last year, which was just such a disappointing year from him. He doesn't have the pressure of everything that was going on in Arizona. the atmosphere that seemed to be developing there, where it wasn't really a winning culture. You know, I think he has the Sedins to kind of fall back on and his fellow countrymen. And we've seen so many Swedish players who've excelled, you know, in Vancouver. And he doesn't have to be the guy. You know, he's not going to get the power play time because, you know, he's going to get some, but probably Hughes is going to get that big chunk. But he doesn't necessarily have to be the guy, despite being a captain in his former organization. And, you know, but he definitely needs to provide leadership back there, especially with the loss of Hamonic. You know, I think that's a bigger loss than people realize, just from a depth perspective and, you know, sort of a shutdown defenseman type. But, you know, I expect him to have a better season than last year. And I don't know, I think a refresh, a restart, sort of rejuvenation of his career. I mean, it's got to be tough being a captain in Arizona. You know, there was so many question marks around the organization. It seemed every year what was going on. And, you know, that's got to take a toll on a player and sort of take the love out of the game, if you will, a little bit too. So I think just a refresh for him and then a restart and going to a new organization that has some really exciting young talent to watch. And I definitely expect him to go back on the upswing this year.
Yeah, who are you most interested about with the on the Vancouver Canucks side of things? Like, I think that personally, man, I really like Connor Garland. And I think that, you know, regardless of what happens to Oliver Ekman-Larsson, and I know it's tough to have that conversation without talking about the cap hit, but I look at that trade and I say, man, I'm almost more excited to see Connor Garland play with the Vancouver Canucks than I am Oliver Ekman-Larsson. But are there any other players, you know, up and down that lineup in Vancouver that you're excited to watch as early as tonight?
You know, it's funny. I got a chance to speak with Connor Garland, you know, over the last couple of years, covering a few games in Arizona. Just, like, really delightful to talk to, just interesting. And I think, you know, when he sees the Canadian media coming, you know, they're excited down there. And, you know, this is a sneaky, sneaky little pickup, I think, by Jim Benning, because, you know, I know he had to pay him and that, but, you know, this is a guy that can score. He's a smaller in stature, but he's kind of wide. So, you know, he's not afraid to get in people's faces. He can play a physical game too. And, you know, I like you, Jeff, I think he's going to be great and he's going to be really good for Vancouver and provide a little scoring punch. I want to see what Hughes does on the back end defensively. You know, I just, he's a young guy still, I get it, but I think he has to take another level defensively. We all know what he can do with the puck on the offensive side of things, but, you know, I just get the sense as a young core now, it's like, okay, what's going to help us win? And for him to be just a little bit better on the defensive side of things, I think could pay huge dividends for Vancouver. And, you know, it's an obvious name to talk about, but, you know, I, again, it's kind of like Edmonton. Like, are they going to be good enough defensively to do what it takes in the playoffs? And we all know what that team can do offensively. And I think Vancouver has a few players that are in that similar frame of mind, if you will, where they got to start being better defensively and start playing, you know, the hockey that'll allow them to win 1-0 games.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you on Quinn Hughes as well. And it was a challenging season that he had. And listen, a lot of people on Vancouver had a challenging season. The whole team did, you know, had a COVID situation as well. Like, all of it. Like, I almost take all of last season and I say, you know, take everything that anyone did with a grain of salt. Because that was, you know, that was the most challenging season that any of these players have ever experienced. So whether it's, you know, Carter Hart's struggles or Quinn Hughes' struggles, like a lot of young players. I was talking to Chuck Fletcher about this yesterday, Cassie. The shutdowns and the restrictions and, you know, how the NHL got through a season was tough on everybody, but was particularly tough on younger players who, you know, didn't have a family to go to at the end of the game. You know, they went back to their, you know, their condo, and, you know, they couldn't go hang out with their buddies, couldn't go to a restaurant, couldn't go to a movie, couldn't do anything. And when you start to struggle, you have no one really to deal with other than yourself and whoever you can call that night. So I kind of take a lot of the performances from young players last season. I say, listen, Carter Hart had a bad year. I don't worry about him this year. I think he bounces back. Ditto for Quinn Hughes as well. One of the players that I'm interested to see tonight, you know, he was ravaged by injuries last season, Elias Pettersson. You know, as you all know, was trending to becoming, you know, one of the super elite players in the NHL. That's one of the guys for me, Cassie, tonight. What do you expect for the guy they call EP40?
Well, he looked pretty good in his first preseason game back, you know, after signing his contract, and didn't look like he missed a beat. You know what? I, and I love this kid, and I think he's going to be an amazing player. But that's the one question mark for me. He's a slight guy, and I know he's going to get bigger, and I know he's going to get stronger with age. But, you know, that's kind of been sort of a little bit of an Achilles heel is the injuries, right? So you just hope this isn't sort of a trending thing that he's going to struggle with throughout his whole career, because to me that's the only thing that's really going to sideline this guy. I mean, I just think he's got so much talent, so much vision, and so poised. And, you know, even you watch him do interviews, he seems like a 45-year-old man. You know, he just seems so mature for his age. And but that's the thing, you know, can he stay healthy? Can he be part of the group and play an 82-game season? And, you know, the talent, there's without question, is there. The drive is there. You can tell this is a guy that wants to win. But that's the thing, you know, as a slender guy, can he stay healthy? And, you know, it's interesting. You saw his teammate over the years, Brandon Sutter, same kind of lanky frame, you know, tall, slender. And that was always something. And now he doesn't have the talent that Pettersson has, but, you know, same thing. He kind of struggles with injuries with that sort of body frame. So you just, you know, fingers crossed that he can just stay healthy and be on the ice as much as possible.
With you on that. Montreal faces off against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Pregame at 6:30 Eastern, puck drops just after 7 o'clock in Toronto. Give us your thoughts on Nick Suzuki. I mean, that was a whopper of a contract. This is a player that many look at and say, you know, this guy is already a legit number one center in the NHL. He's going to play every situation. He's your mini Patrice Bergeron. What do you make of Nick Suzuki, and do you like the deal?
I do. I like the deal for both sides. And, you know, you took the words right out of my mouth about Patrice Bergeron, because that's who I think of when I watch him play. Mm-hmm. You know, you and Elliot spoke to Drew Doughty this summer, and he ranted and raved about playing against Nick Suzuki. And, you know, that's one of the guys he's looking forward to playing with, and they skate in the summertime together. So, you know, that's big praise from a star defenseman in the league. And that's the first name that he thought of, you know. So I just think he's a complete package already. I do think there's another level offensively that he'll get to. I think there's been a real focus by a young player to be really solid defensively, to be a really smart player defensively. And once he kind of gets that, and I think he's got it under his belt, you know, the offense, I think, is going to open up a little bit. And, you know, the chemistry between him and Caulfield, I think, is going to, you know, improve and increase throughout this season. And I just think a real smart guy, a leader guy, and very much like Patrice Bergeron, you know, doesn't necessarily skate the best, but always has an ability to get there, always in the right position, just really cerebral. And I think a guy, a centerman that can play up and down their lineup, obviously you're going to want him on the top two lines, but I think over his career, he can pretty much play anywhere with anyone because that's his hockey IQ. And I think this is a good deal. You know, some people are talking about it's overpaid for the points that he's had, but I think we're going to see those point levels increase throughout this year and in previous and, you know, years to come.
Yeah, I was making the point on the program yesterday that here's someone that I could have seen perhaps, you know, going through the season, betting on himself and trying to hit that $9 million mark of after a good season this year. That's why I think, like, right now it might look like an overpay to some people. But when you look at, you know, what his career is going to look like by the end of this contract, we may go back and look at this and say, this is a steal for the Montreal Canadiens. Sure, early it looked like a lot, but it probably won't surprise anybody if by the end this looks like a good deal. Quick thought on the Maple Leafs before I ask you about the Canadian national team quickly. Cassie, does it matter what the Maple Leafs do in the regular season?
No, and it shouldn't to them, although it's a process, and that is something I think. You know, I was watching that Amazon series, and boy, and I know it's little clips here and there, and we don't often see the whole picture, but man, was there ever a focus on winning the cup? Like, was there ever a focus right from the start on the playoffs? And so there should be, but I also think it has to be about a process, and I think that's something Sheldon Keefe is trying to instill in lessons learned over previous years. You know, that, you know, they're much like a team that has to learn how to win 1-0 games. I mean, they have such high offensive talent and skill, but, you know, they need to learn to win those games and close out those 1-0 leads in the third period and the 2-1 leads and, you know, find a way to kind of be that grinding team when they need to be. But to me, it's got to be about the process, especially here in Toronto, where they're going to talk about the playoffs right from day one. So
yeah,
you really got to focus on the little things that you need to do to continue to get better and play the right way come playoff time.
Let me ask you about the national team. And great world championship, and was, listen, well watched, as we all know. Great excitement around it. Big win for Canada. Very dramatic. Hearing that horn go off was unique. And the as the celebration started, I can remember, Cassie, before Team Canada orientation camp once, I said, "Hey, Cassie, of the young players, who should I watch?" And you said, "Watch 29." And this was before the phenomenon became Marie-Philippe Poulin. Like, watch this player. Jeff, just watch 29. And she turned into the best player in the world, flat out, full stop, Marie-Philippe Poulin. Does Sarah Filliet have...
who's kidding you?
She's incredible.
Learning to become a leader, a great leader, too, yeah. And being willing to learn to become a great leader in both French and English, which is, yeah, you know, something that... a lot more difficult than people appreciate when French is your first language and, you know, you need to basically lead in English. And I think she's just really, you know, that loss, I think, in Pyeongchang just changed her whole philosophy on leadership. Like, what can I do to help everyone around me be better? And I think that's something she's really grasped and taken hold of. And, you know, a phenomenal player. No one scored in the history of the game that more bigger goals than she has. And, you know, it was nice to play a small role in it, Jeff, like lucky number seven for me. And I got to be back and work under my former teammate and Gina Kingsbury, and Troy Ryan's an amazing coach. And, you know, I've really enjoyed my time with Hockey Canada. So I don't know what the future holds for me there, but I really enjoyed my time going back and being part of it again, a small part of it, but listen, it's been a lot of fun.
You're a treasure, and we all know that. And we all know that there's a building in downtown Toronto on Front Street, and your name will be in it, and your plaque will be in it one day, Cassie. But I want to ask you about one quickie. We got like 30 seconds for this one.
Yeah.
I mentioned Marie-Philippe Poulin. Does Sarah Filliet have the potential to reach that level of greatness?
For sure. You know, she's really skilled and very similar, very, you know, skilled, quick player, explosive. And this is a kid that, you know, like Nick Suzuki, wants to learn, wants to get better, really emotional kid, a lot of fun. And, you know, Natalie Sooner's kind of taken Sarah Filliet under her wing a little bit and really included her in everything. And it's been fun to watch sort of over the last year and a half or so. But yeah, she's going to be a star. You know, like, I don't want to put too much pressure on her because she does have that ability to be like a super, super star. But this is a kid that really wants to learn, really wants to get better every day. And it's been fun to watch her practice and watch her development at the World Championships, play in some key defensive situations. So, you know, she's got a bright future as long as she keeps working hard.
No pressure at all. Just become the next Marie-Philippe Poulin, Sarah. Go and enjoy your career. Hey, Cassie, listen, enjoy it tonight. Our coverage on Sportsnet kicks off tonight with the Montreal Canadiens and the Toronto Maple Leafs and then the Vancouver Canucks and Edmonton Oilers. We'll be watching. Thanks, Cassie.
All right. Cheers, Jeffrey. Talk to you soon.
There she is, Cassie Campbell-Pascal from the NHL on Sportsnet. I want to thank all of our guests here on the program today, the aforementioned Cassie Campbell-Pascal. Before her, Rod Brind'Amour, Carolina Hurricanes head coach. And as he kicks off each and every broadcast, the one and only Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada and 32 Thoughts. Enjoy Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey this evening. All the action gets underway at 6:30 Eastern with your pregame show, The Puck Drops, in downtown Toronto just after 7. Merrick Show back tomorrow at noon Eastern. Have a great day.